morning, family. I am Virginia, a grateful recovering alcoholic. Delighted to be here. Glad to be anywhere. Want to thank the committee. They've done a fabulous job with this conference. I want to thank you for inviting me. I really got a lot out of the meeting last night, and I want to thank everybody who shared and who will continue to share in this group. I am a recovering alcoholic that's very, very grateful, and I always give credit where credit is due. I have to give God the Father, Jesus the Son, and the Holy Spirit credit for creating Alcoholics Anonymous and allowing a drunk like me to live. And then I have to give credit to God for picking out a sponsor and for looking down one day upon a drunk like me, and he said, you know, there goes my kid. She's written to die, and she's never lived. I better do something for her, you know. And so he did. He let me get real, real sick. So if you're here and you're new, I want to welcome you. You have an opportunity to stop, listen, and learn as you trudge this road of happy destiny with the rest of us. My CEO is here with me and a couple of my friends from Jacksonville, and he gave me what I am, a back-to-basic bag. You know, that's what I am. Born May 10, 1931, that makes me almost 73 years old. Reborn April 8, 1966, that makes me almost 38 years sober. And I'm eternally grateful for the second birth. In earlier years, I used to come to meetings a lot, and I still go a lot because I'm kind of chicken. I don't like pain. We lived together for a long time, but I still don't like pain. That's why I was getting kind of nervous when Bill was up here flooding around with the microphone. I thought, Bill, I know you're an engineer. I believe you. You should just set out and call the hotel and tell them to come fix this thing. But in earlier years, they said to me, because I memorized, I'm a speed reader, and I memorized chapter 5, night 1. And when I came back to the meeting, I was ready to raise my hand to read, and they said, put your hands down. You can't do nothing but stand up and tell your name and your disease. And you will never have to memorize anything in this program. They stopped me. Because all we will ever do is ask you to share your experience, your strength, and your hope. And so I learned, and you ought to be happy about that. You ought to be delighted that I don't get to tell you all of the intricate details. You know, there's a lot of myths running through this program, and I've heard a lot of them as I travel across the country and the world and hear people sharing. A lot of myths. Just keep coming back to meetings. Don't drink, and you're going to be all right. I don't know about that. Don't worry about the steps. Just accept them and do a step four so you can get some of that trash out of you. I don't know about that. I'm going to tell you precisely what they did for me, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And if you come to the table and the banquet table that's set for life, and you pick up a soda cracker, got every food on the table you can imagine in the world, and you pick up a soda cracker and walk out saying, I'm still hungry. They didn't look at me right, so I ain't eating them with them. That's your business. God has never mandated that I make you get the message of recovery. He never told me that I had to help you get the message of recovery. He told me I had to share with you recovery. And that it would become contagious. And I'm from the old school. A whole city of people raised me. You know, I didn't have sense enough to pick out a sponsor because I was looking for somebody that could help me out with a little money. You know, I was looking for somebody that would understand. I was looking for somebody that would do a little loving. You know, looking for Mr. Goodbar. Went all over town looking for Mr. Goodbar. Couldn't find him because the old biddies kept interfering. You know, so I really needed some things, but They didn't give me what I needed. They gave me, they didn't give me what I wanted. They gave me what I needed. And I'm eternally grateful. I did not pick out my sponsor. There's no way that I would come to a place like Melbourne from the housing project, sitting on apple crates drinking wine, would I fly over here and say, I need a sponsor. Because you would not understand. You know, I did not have a drug of choice, and I didn't mess with all the other stuff because I knew it was not economically feasible. So if you're sitting out there and you happen to be alcoholic and God bless you. You know, if you keep coming back, I hope that you catch the disease of alcoholism, because you don't get this disease till you quit taking chemicals anyhow. And you may end up being a strange alcoholic, but try your best to catch this disease so you can recover from a helpless and hopeless state of body and mind. And that's what was served to me. So my sponsor was picked out for me by God himself. And what he picked out was a little quiet suburban housewife who lived in a gated community who wore nylons and carried her purse and got dressed up to go shopping for groceries. She drove a brand new BMW. You know, and she always had a smile on her face. Her hair was extremely well groomed. Her nails were always done. And she played golf. Knock a ball away and go chase it. And I could tell you my background in detail, but it wouldn't do any good because all kinds of people become alcoholics as I did. And the excuses that I used for years was that no one had ever loved me. And I blamed my poor mom for being a real slutty, loose broad for years. When my 90-year-old aunt said, you had the nicest mom in the world. It was your daddy that was a rotten drunk. I knew I got somebody that messed me up, you know. So we're the complete opposite. We don't talk the same language. She has a soft, I have a tenor's voice that I've had most of my life. And she has a soft voice, very feminine woman, you know, wears her hair pulled back in a bun and looking very ladylike and housewifey. And I'm very loose, okay? So I'm out there and I'm running with gangs that you have to get them before they get you. And I come to the AA, and they introduce me to this little woman and say, this is your sponsor. They didn't ask me. They just said, I didn't know you could pick one out. You know, I thought they was appointed to you, you know. And I looked at her, and I thought, what the? How could you do this to me? And all, she ruled me with an iron thumb, soft voice and all, for 27 years. Showed me how to live, and then she showed me how to die. She went home from work and sat on the couch and died. And I almost died. Now, I didn't cry at my mother's funeral when I was a little girl, but I cried at my sponsor's funeral, and I thought I had lost my life. Because there, when in the casket, would lay this woman that had all these secrets that I needed to have. But what she had done with me, she had introduced me as a newcomer every place we went, and she wouldn't let me just go to meetings in the ghetto. She said, you will think that all drunks are ghetto, and I don't want you to suffer from that false belief. You know, I want you to understand that this disease does not care where you live and who you are and how much you got and how many degrees you got. I sponsored a guy in Los Angeles, and I said to him that you cannot come in here and play your agenda. Your life is unmanageable. He said, young lady, I put a missile on the moon. I said, yes, yeah, sucker, but you couldn't put the cap on a bottle. So it really doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, how much you know, how many degrees you got, and how many you don't have. I came in as an eighth grade dropout. School got in my way. You know, I came in from being a little girl, and the next thing I know, I'm in a woman's body walking the streets trying to hustle alcohol. I always look for King, because I heard of King alcohol, you know. I used to take people to meetings from a mental health unit one while, and I saw that they said something. I listened out the window while I drank my Colt 45, and I heard something about King alcohol. Yeah, you King in my life. I don't need nobody but you. You know, and that was the truth. But I'm grateful to God that I went the route that I went. I'm glad that I came to you with what I had, which was nothing. I was driven. I did not run over here and all of a sudden discover that I ain't living right. I need to straighten up my act and get it together. I was just driven here. Because, you see, booze has a habit of doing this thing that it did to me. After so long a use and so much booze, I begin to lose things that I never had, you know. And people come in here with low self-worth. I came in with no self-worth. People come in here with somebody still enabling. Nobody ever enabled me. I had a hard time getting a bottle of Colt 45, a can of Colt 45 and a bottle of Gallo red wine. And that was only 47 cents and 25 cents then. Cigarettes was 20 cents a pack, so all I needed was 25 cents for the Colt 45, 20 cents for a pack of cigarettes, and a small bottle of wine. Had trouble getting it at the end, you know. And even that fabulous body that I had, 34, 18, 42, had trouble finding it, you know. Man, don't buy that bee no drink. That bee, if you buy her a drink, you got to buy 8 bags of potato chips and 8 sodas. She got a whole gob of kids out there in the car because I took them everywhere I went, you know. And that's another thing that booze did for me. I worked in a birth control clinic, and they fired me and put me in occupational therapy because I got pregnant every year. I was scared to death of responsibility. There's no way in the world that I would have had 8 kids unless I'd been a drunk. That was just totally insane. I'm scared of responsibility, and every time I turn around, I got something new that I got to change diapers and you know, and figure out how to get them some milk. And I breastfed every one of them because it ain't cool to have to need milk for a baby. You know, you need wine. You don't need no milk. So you have to breastfeed them and take care of them, you know, best you can with what you got, you know. And here I am floating through life, and finally I make it over to this meeting, and I got this little plugy kind of square sponsor taking me everywhere, reading to me from the big book, and I'm thinking she's a genius, you know, because she had these answers for me on the telephone. And I'm listening. I said, God, she's smart, you know. But I later on learned that where she got her information from, because she introduced me to that big book, and she told me don't memorize it, just try to let it soak in, and pretty soon you're gonna uncover, discover, and discard. You're gonna make room for this program of recovery, and so I began to take the steps before I understood the steps. And I hear nowadays, well, I don't understand. What do I do? You know, you just do what it says. What do you mean, what do you do? What makes you powerless over alcohol? You know, falling down steps, becoming a sheriff like I did in Los Angeles County and getting drunk in the jail. You know, I don't know what makes you powerless over it. I had a sergeant that chased me for years, and he said, I'm going to catch you. And he said, I said, MF, you ain't smart enough to catch me. And he wrote that one up. And the captain said, well, who witnessed it for you? He said, nobody. And that's the only way I got by. And I said, boy, I'm slick. I'm really cool because he can't get nothing on me. I'm too smart for that. And I'm backing off down the cliff every step of the way. Every time I'm backing off and getting smart and manipulating you, I'm backing up. And I'm getting ready to fall off the cliff at any day now. And I don't even know this, you know. But no matter how smart you get, you can't get too dumb to make this program, but you can be too smart. And I got pretty terrifically gifted for a while there. You know. But through it all, somehow or another, you know, at the very end, when I could not get drunk, and after many, many episodes that we don't get to share from the podium, because you don't need the drama, you just need the know-how, you know. And the basics of this thing is it tells me early in the game in this program, it says, burn it into the consciousness of every newcomer that they can get not better, not improved. My big book says you can get well. Ah, I look at the faces in the audience and now she's up there just lying. But I ain't lying. I ain't lying. Look in your book. If anybody's sponsoring you and they're not giving you directions from that big book, ask them where can you find it in the big book. Ask your sponsor. It's okay to ask them. Sponsor, what page could I read that on? Because I want to make sure I do this thing right. You know. I'm telling you what they did to me. They bought me a thick tablet. And they said, you can get well. Now, I know that's impossible. That's incredible. That ain't going to happen. They don't really know me. Now, when I start telling them some of this stuff I done did and what's running through my head now without any alcohol, I don't have any alcohol in my body, you know, but I'm crazy as blazes sitting in these rooms. You sitting in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous and they're reading how it works. And my mind is over there in Rome with Caesar's palace. I ain't never been to Rome at that time. Don't know nothing about Caesar's palace. But I'm dreaming that without going to sleep, that I'm in Caesar's palace hiding behind one of the poles. You know, so you can go crazy without a drink. You can sit in meetings and hear the recipe given. Like I said, you can walk up to the table and get a cracker and walk away. Well, I'm feeling better. Feelings come and they go. And I always got a fabulous word that Clancy doesn't allow me to say anymore, and that's F your feelings. They come and they go, you know. But my feelings would tell me things like, you know, last year you saw your husband cheating with that neighbor next door. You ought to cut his head off his body when he comes home. Thought came. Feeling said, yeah. That's a good deal. You could help God balance the universe. It's uneven with him walking around. So I prepared to do that, you know, and he comes in and he only jumped on me when I was half drunk. Because, you know, I was a pretty mean booger bear when I was okay. You know, if I'm on my own two feet. But he called me half drunk and he said, you are the biggest bee in town. And I'm going to take these kids and leave you. And when he said bee, I didn't get in something and he slapped me. And I didn't really feel the pain because I transformed my mind and saw him screwing my neighbor. And I just reached for that jungle knife in the fireplace. And when I pulled it up, he ran out the door. And I chased him for blocks. Now, you imagine where I moved, trying to get to a little bit better neighborhood. And I'm running down the street chasing my spouse with a jungle knife. One of them long knives. You know, if I could just get close to him, I could just slice his head off the body. And that would be the end of that. This is without any chemicals, folks. I ain't drunk. I ain't drinking. But I'm activated on that mind and that thinking that I've planted down there for years. So uncovering was very vital to me. It was very necessary to me. I had to take stuff out of here so that I could make room for the message of recovery. I had no space in my agenda. I had no place to go to put the stuff that you were giving me. It's like you give me a gift and I got an arm full of stuff, trashy clothes and everything. And I said, but I can't take your gift. And you said, but it's a diamond. And I said, but I can't take it right now. You have to hold it till I come back. That's stupid. Yet we come to Alcoholics Anonymous and the master design for living is right here. It's within the big book and it's within the fellowship where people have transplanted these steps into their lives and the principles ooze out into your experience and you begin to walk and not run. You begin to operate. I remember when I first noticed peace in this program. I called my sponsor and I said, I'm so lonely I could die. She said, tell me how you feel. I told her. She said, honey, that ain't loneliness, that's peace. I said, I'll be darned. I finally got what I've been asking for. Because I said, God, I know you ain't going to give me a new husband because I still got that old raggedy man in the room in there. I know you're not going to make these 8 kids disappear. I know you're not going to wipe out all them bad checks that I wrote. But maybe you'll give me just a little bit of peace. If I could just have peace enough to go to sleep at night instead of passing out. If I could just have peace enough just to wake up in the morning, you know, without coming to. You know, coming to and passing out ain't no living. And I did it for years, you know. So I'm without chemicals and I can't sleep at night. And my sponsor gave me a list of names of all the people who worked graveyards that could receive phone calls. And then she gave me a list of people that got off at 11 o'clock at night and be home by 12 so I could call them up. And so I talked to AA members all night long and they transmitted, gave me divine transfusions to receive enough to stay, stop from drinking so I could have a chance at taking enough out and putting in what you were serving me. I knew nothing about recovery. I never sat around on drinking wine and whatever you had and discussed. Wonder how we're going to get out of this jam we're getting ourselves in. I wonder how we're going to get sober one day and stand up and be upright citizens. And neighbors will stop talking about me across my yard. We used to have a nice neighborhood before she moved in here. You know, it used to be a very respectable area. You know, but honey, we just kind of going to the dogs. They just letting anybody buy property over here now. And that's the way I came to you. And I'm walking through and they said, the very first principle you're going to get is self-honesty. Now that did not interest me. There come one of my long lost, late sponsees from Orlando. She only has to come 2 minutes and still coming in late. Everybody notice her too. She knows better. If I was her, I would have stood outside the door and cracked the door and listened. So I don't give you all the secrets. I just tell you half of them. But anyway, they walked with me through that step. And what scared me so much about that step was probably what still scares people that I sponsor today, is that that step made me look at me. And I had nobody to blame. Nobody had ever forced me to drink. And all that stuff I blamed on my mother, even if that had been true, there was no forcing me to drink. Nobody had. I had totally screwed up my life and skipped very vital points in my life, like becoming sociably acquainted, like learning love instead of trying to make love with the world, instead of trying to bulldoze my way through situations, negotiate my way through situations, and understand that God loved me. And, you know, I came to AA bragging that God was really good to me because he gave me some food for the kids and he did this and he did that. And I stayed sober long enough to flash back and review my life. And I know today that God never left me on the streets of Los Angeles. Had he left me for a second, I would not be here today. And just imagine, I would have missed out on all of these years of good living that had been laid up with my name on the gift for years. And so I'm walking up the steps now to step two. And as I get up there, I'm looking for the principle of hope. Just maybe what these old biddies are telling me, because I got about 8 or 9 sponsors, all these old timers are helping my sponsor with me because I'm such a case. that they figure she needs help. She's got 7 years, and they said, that ain't enough time. You need some help with that one. That girl is a pistol. I meet people every day that are duplicates of myself, you know. And so I'm looking at the principle of hope, and I'm thinking, principle? How do I get hope? When I'm sitting here, I can't pay the rent. The landlord wants to put me out, you know, because I own 4 or 5 months rent, and I have my sponsor stop her car back at the corner instead of behind my house, in front of my house. And one night, while I'm dealing with this step, she said, it is now time for you to face that guy. You've been here long enough to understand that you got to get out the car and deal with that. So I'm going to pull up behind his car tonight. I want you to get out of the car and tell him whatever form of truth you know, and then deal with whatever he says. And I just got acquainted with step two. You know, I just learned that there is hope for a drunk of my type. And here I am confronted with putting it in practice. That ain't cool. You know, but that's what happened to me. So I walk up and I'm shaking. And I said, Mr. Simmons, I ain't got no money. I don't know where to get none from. But when I get some, I'll give you some of it. He said, well, I'll be damned. That's the first time you told me the truth in years. Okay, I'll wait for you. And he pulled off. I thought, dang. How do they know this stuff? How can I get some more of this stuff? Well, I better keep on doing what they told me because I ain't mastered the recipe yet. So I kept moving up the steps. And when I got to step three, I was looking for the principle of faith. And as I walked up that step, you know, I began, and that's when she said, you might want to look in the oldest book there is. And so I looked in there, and I found out that there was a description of faith that fit me perfect. And most of us know it. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. I had not hoped for anything. I had not seen anything worth having and worth keeping. My past, I could not afford to stay there and to go back there, and I couldn't stay where I was. So I had nothing to do but to follow you. I was forced to follow you. And thank God I was forced to follow you. Thank God I didn't get the recipe all at once. Thank God that I got it gradually. I'm eternally grateful for the people that I stand on the shoulders of giants. I'm a product of a lot of people. I can claim nothing original, you know. But I'm grateful to God that I was whipped into willingness. And I'm grateful to God that I was beaten into submission. And that I was dumb enough to take these steps and to follow this big book and the directions. My big book says, here are the steps which are directed. I have an original book as a program of recovery. My big book also says you must find God now. It doesn't say you may you find God now. It says you got to find him now because we can't help you. No human power could relieve the ism that I got after I stopped drinking. And I'm grateful that I know today that only 5% was my drinking. 95% was and is my thinking. So what do I have to do? I have to keep trash out of my head. Every now and then I indulge. And every time I do, I get in trouble. I will feed myself some information. Plan it from, you know, Bill Wilson wrote an article last month on depression in the Grapevine. They printed it from 1953, I think it was. And he was talking about depression that he had picked up, and he talked about the subconscious. You know, that's a powerful thing, the way God made us. You know, watch the way you think and live and be, because I'm going to plant 90% of your mind in the subconscious. And after almost 38 years, that stuff creeps up, and I said, you know what? I don't like the way he talked to me this morning. When I get home, I'm going to tell him. And I went home and I made a mess. This is in sobriety this year, this last year. So I'm 37 years sober. I know a lot about the program of recovery, a lot about the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, a lot about the founders. I've sat in front of the giants of this program, and I thought I was in paradise. You know, but here I am sitting on my patio, sipping a cup of coffee, and planning on how to get even with my husband that I was irritated with anyway. And as I mastered this idea, I said, you know, girl, you're really good. I was so proud of this plan that I came up with to teach him a lesson. He will never speak to me like that again. Because when I get through with him, I'm going to... In fact, this is so good, I might tell a couple of my sponsees about it. I then felt myself getting instantly sick. What's wrong with me? I said. God, I'm hot and I'm cold and I'm feeling sick and weak. Some said, you better go in the house, you're fixing to pass out. So I went in the house and I passed out. When I come to, it's late at night, it's dark, my husband's at a meeting, and I get up to go to the bathroom, I fell and broke a coffee glass table. I stumbled to the bathroom, and then it dawned on me, what I had done was I had put some infection in my thinking. Deliberately so, I planted some thoughts. Every time I try that, I get sick. Physically sick. So pretty soon, if you're smart as I am, after 37 years, you begin to catch on and say, I can't do that no more. You got to wear it. You got to walk it. You got to talk it. If you want the blessings of this program, if you want the benefits, if you want sobriety, and sobriety is not chemical freedom, folks, please don't buy that no more. I'm clean and I'm sober. My other big book tells me none's perfect but the Father, and I ain't the Father. I ain't even a mama no more, you know. So I'm just floating around here trying to do the best that I can with what I got, and I'm trying to tell you that chemical freedom must occur if you want to embrace sobriety, if you want a chance at achieving it. So what I did was I just got dumb enough, and I just kept on coming back, you know, and things begin to happen. Now I'm wondering, what am I going to do with myself? Because the sheriff's department said you can't come back till you've been out for a year. And I will have no friends, because all my friends are my drinking buddies. I will have nothing to do. And my sponsor said, you got a lot to do. You got to make a life for yourself. Here you are, 34, almost 35 years old, and you don't even know how to live, so you can learn how to live. And you keep coming back to these meetings, and you keep doing what we tell you to do. And the first thing you can do is go to school, because you was mad about the speaker last night. You call him an educated fool, because the man had several doctorate degrees, and you didn't finish the eighth grade, so you got jealous. So go back to school. So they sent me to school. And after cursing out the first school, I got in the second one. Yeah. And things began to happen. I got an AA, and then I got a bachelor's, and then I got my master's, and I don't even know what I'm doing. And I became an international rep to find low-interest money for corporations across this country that were doing acquisitions, expansions, developments. And I found that niche in graduate school. So I'm going in and out of these countries, and I don't know what I'm doing. But I got master grant writers and proposal writers giving me the fanciest packages that the world has ever seen. So all I got to do is read it and kind of hit on it a little bit. And you know, I got most of my things done. Through the grace of God, this fellowship began to reward the little feeble efforts that I had put in. You know, and I'm thinking, you know, boy, this thing is all right. So I, the drunk, I was listening to Ed talk last night, and I so appreciate is sharing with me. I had a drunk that sat on the apple crate drinking wine out of a bottle when I got down very, very low where I didn't have any money, and the wino sitting around the fire. Some of you have seen some wino sitting around the fire in the can, right? Okay, well, I was one of those drunks that drifted over and said, I'm just going to run over here and get me a little swig of the alcohol. And I looked at this guy drinking out the bottle before me, and I remember how distasteful his lips looked. They were all inflamed and really pulsy looking. And I said, alcohol kills all germs, as I turned that bottle up. So don't tell me that you haven't been there and you can't go there. Now, all of that stuff was not necessary. That is not what makes an alcoholic. How much I drink, where I drink it at, who I drink it with, does not matter. You can drink it at the Ritz if you want to. If you drink like I drink, you're going to get into problems. You can drink it in Fernandina Beach. You can drink it down here in Melbourne. You can drink it up in Los Angeles down on Main Street. It doesn't matter where you drink it at. It matters what it does to you. And it did a job on me. So that's why I'm so receptive to the program of recovery. I'm extremely fanatically obsessed with recovery and the 12 steps of recovery, because that is the thing, through the grace of God, that the way that I was delivered. 2 or 3 years ago, my spouse didn't like Jacksonville, and he said, I'm going back to California. I said, good, go. He said, you would break up a good marriage? That was his opinion. Just to be stubborn. And I said, no, I just discovered that I can live with or without anything and anybody except a program of recovery and the God of my own understanding. I cannot do without those things. But I can do without you and you and you and you, because you're going to send me somebody to trudge this road with. You know, I'm grateful to God that I was not filibustered in here, that nobody fed me any flim-flam stuff. I'm grateful to God that this day, I'm delighted to be Virginia and Virginia only. There's nobody else in this world that I want to be except myself. I have arrived at that place, and it's about time, because in a couple of months I'm going to be 73, and that's getting awfully close to 85. You know. And I promise God, if you extend me all the way up to 85 or 90, somewhere in there, because my family are long livers. My grandma died almost 100, and my, you know, other relatives, they're pretty old when they die. So I said, if you let me get that far, I'll be quite willing to check out at any time, because I don't want my kids raising hell about, Mom, we bought you a pack of cigarettes last month. You know, and none of them like me smoking, so they probably try to take my cigarettes away and turn me into quite a bee. So I don't want to be extended, you know, around here where I can't function. I just want to be able to move. And Chuck C. said to me, you stay on this earth and you get a chance to do God's will until your work is finished. So he said, let me tell you a secret to a long life, kid. Keep a lot of work on the table. So I keep a lot of activity on the table. I work for a wonderful agency that my CEO is sitting up front here, and we are a very comprehensive agency, and I'm his advocate. I'm his advisory commissioner. I just pull him to the side and I, look, brother, we need this. And we need that. And we also are very active in the community, and we're very active AA in any form. You know, they fully support. I give them full credit. You need to know that as I march across this country and I stand upon these stages, Gateway never charges me for being absent. And I think that is a tremendous, terrifically gift. You know, I don't take it for granted. They don't pay me a damn thing, but but they take good care of me, you know. Now, if you think that sobriety just affords you an opportunity to get sober, live happily ever after, let me tell you, there's a lot of joy in this program. And I always ask God to help me to laugh. But I said, please don't let me forget that I have cried. And I haven't just cried out there while I was drunk. I've cried in these rooms. I can remember my first no from God in Alcoholics Anonymous. Somebody said, your son is shot. And I said, please, God, don't let him die. It was my favorite son. And I know most parents say, well, how can you have a favorite son? Every parent got a favorite child. They just lie. You know. But I never met one that didn't have a favorite kid, that had just a drop of favor over the rest of the people in your heart. You don't show it. And he died. And I went crazy because I thought that my sins had caught up with me. And by the way, if you knew, sin ain't nothing but self-inflicted nonsense. You know. So hold on to that, because you inflict a lot of nonsense on yourself in sobriety. You know, and so that was a no. And then my second no came, you know, when I'm sober and I'm living happy, joyous, and free, and I'm doing real, real good, and all of these different troubles begin to come along my way. So I prayed to God for years, you know, God, give me some peace, give me a purpose, you know, make my life be meaningful. Don't let me live and die and not leave anything on this earth, you know. And God, would you kind of give me some money before I go? Because I'm so tired of being poor, I don't know what to do. Okay? So I gave away $15,000 to people that bought my house when I moved to Jacksonville so they could close their deal. They had a layoff on their jobs. And I gave them the money. I went to Vegas, put five nickels in a machine, and won $11,000 short of $1 million. Now, on five nickels, and I didn't lose a nickel because I won 540 nickels before I won the big pot. Now, I did not guide that money right. I'm a real estate broker. I'm an ex-cop, and I got a lot of traits behind me, you know. But I didn't use them. I got me a CPA. I got me an attorney. I got this and I got that. And I let them handle it. And they handled it right on down to Enron and... And poverty appeared on the scene again. And I said, look, God, I can't go back there. I came from that. I can never back up. And then it dawned on me that God does not take anybody backwards. He always keeps moving you forward. And I said, I got to just keep following directions. And he gave me directions to go to work at a nonprofit agency. I have a lot of friends throughout this world, you know, and I can call somebody and hook up and connect, you know. So I wanted to hook up with some of them people that I made great, you know, that I had worked with them and did their work and got them. Mark Victor Hansen was one of my adopted sons, like Lee is my adopted son, you know. And I used to take Mark and I made his first speaking engagement, $2,500. Now he makes $25,000 for an hour. You know, so I can call on them, you know. And God said, no, I didn't get you sober to be a beggar. I didn't get you sober to back up to poverty. I got you sober so you could share life with other people. Give your gifts that I have freely given to you and share them with others. And so I just keep on marching down the road. And you know what? I became convinced that since I was praying to God about a month ago, and maybe 3 weeks, and I got very deliberate. And I said, look, God, this is getting to be serious stuff down here. You know, you need to know that I represent you all over the world. I tell everybody I'm under your care. So you mess up with me, you're going to ruin your reputation. Because they know I ain't nothing of myself. They know that I'm leaning on you. And then I get a call to come and speak at another meeting. God, you got me a little confused with somebody else because I wasn't talking about service. I'm talking about money. So, and I get my same message back. Be still and know that I am God. And that was given to me early in sobriety. I am in all creation. I have enwrapped myself in you. Know this, my child, this is the truth that is setting you free. And all that I have to do is keep peeling off the layers and keep peeling off the layers until I get to the God center within me, and then I manifest whatever it is that I'm supposed to manifest. And then I go on down the road and I keep jogging, trudging. Sometimes I try to jog. But I keep trudging this road of happy destiny, and I keep looking and expecting the very best to come from me for you. And I never know what has been said at the podium when I finish, but I am certain that I have asked God early this morning, you know, Father, I just want to be a transparent messenger for you. I just want to be the kind of alcoholic woman that can say, come on that stage, on that platform. When I saw Bill and Dr. Bob and other people, I was fascinated. You know, like, my God, how could this be? that I'm the drunk that floats around 2 o'clock in the morning trying to see whose light's on in the neighborhood, because if you're up 2 o'clock in the morning, you got to be having a party. Looking for who's got lights on, or coming out of some bar when they're throwing you out, you know, or floating around trying to figure out which way is home, or coming to and finding out that you just tore up somebody's car and you got to get the heck out the neighborhood. You know, all kinds of stuff is happening to me, and I come in here and I get a chance to be loved and respected and used by the CEO of the universe. That is power. Now, I have still a lack of power, but I have what I call, like Rush Limbaugh says, I have talent on loan from God. I have power on loan from God that I use on a daily basis to share my experience, my strength, and my hope. And I really get kind of bullheaded, because sometimes I just want to cut it short and say, why are you going back to Jacksonville to go down here to the corner? You're going the wrong way. Just go straight down here. It's only half a block to the next corner. That's where you're trying to go. You said, no, I'm going to go 10 miles up here, and then I'm going to go left 15 miles, and then I'll come back down this way. No. Here it is. We ain't even got a big book up here. I never talk where it ain't no big book. Here are the steps we took. Suggested as a program of recovery. If you want what we got, you do what we do. Because if you always do what you always did, you're going to always get what you always got. That's old, but it's true. You know, and I find that I had to get some new habits in place, because the habits I had in place had been used so long they became a part of my character. And since they was all bad habits, they became character defects. So I was one big ball of defects. And I come in here and I spend 37 plus years pulling off a layer, like a ball of steel wool, just pulling off a little bit and pulling off a little bit and replacing it with people like Ed talking last night, with people like Cliff and Pat here today. You know, with all of the things that have been given to me, and now I have boundaries around myself. I promised God that I would not die with any secrets that would help somebody, that I would not sit back and be passive and allow you to stumble on down the road. Well, you know, to each his own. Bull, Twinkie, you're an alcoholic. It ain't no to each his own. If you're an alcoholic, you don't have my program. I don't have my program. I'm in the program. And I'm with the God of my understanding. And I love myself enough to participate in what you got here for me to do, so that I can become a better person. God ain't finished with me yet, so don't panic. You know, a lot of good is yet to come. In fact, I maintain that the best is yet to come. I'm dumb enough to believe that. The latter shall be greater than the first. You know, I'm directed to believe that. And I believe that everybody under the sound of my voice and scattered throughout the entire world has a real good chance at following the directions of recovery. You know, if you got a toothache, you go to the dentist. But don't tell him your rectum is bleeding. Because he don't take care of rectum. You know, he just take care of teeth, okay? So if you got other addictions, you go over there and get it treated. And then you go over there and get that treated. Then you go over there and get that treated. Then you come on back over here and we'll give you the master spiritual level balancing that you need to get it worked out. You know, it's a good thing to be sober. And through the grace of God, I get a chance to have experience. I've been all over the world, and God knows I'm extremely grateful to go all over my United States. I love this country. I love America so much. You know, it is a fabulous country, and I've been so many places, and there's nobody that can touch what we got. You know, I'm grateful to be an American. I'm grateful to be a woman of color. I'm grateful that I don't have to lay out in the sun and burn all day to get brown. I am so delighted to be my age, because if I backed up my age, I'd have to back up my experience. And I don't want to take that away. So I'm grateful to be who I am and what I am, and I'm grateful to be planted right where I am. And now I know the meaning of the poem that the sergeant gave me who tried to catch me and bust me in the jail for all the years I got drunk. And I'm going to share this with you before I sit down because it's my favorite poem, you know. And it was written by Helen Steiner Rice, and I read it for years. It was on a greeting card. It was a congratulation card for my first year birthday. And it goes, "Bless us, Heavenly Father, forgive our erring ways. Grant us strength to serve you. Keep putting purpose in our days. Give us understanding enough to keep us kind, so that we may judge each other with our hearts and not our minds. Help us to be faithful in everything we do. Let us be content to trust your wisdom and to follow after you. Master, help us as we falter, and hear us as we pray, and grant that we may walk hand in hand with you, with each other, each day. May God bless us and keep us coming back, and bless us with the divine intent to take the steps and do the best that we can do with what we got, and stop trying to do the next right thing when you don't even know what the H it is. God bless you. Keep coming back."